years, I've told many stories about my dad, and I'm sure you might remember some of them, you might not. But my dad wasn't a loud person. He was pretty serious, but he was definitely the patriarch of the family. But I haven't told as many stories about my mom. And like you, my mom had a lot to do with my life, and obviously, you know, giving me life and giving you your life. But my mom was she was the hardest working person I've ever known. She would wake up at 4 in the morning, and she would start working in the home, and then she would go, and she was a key element of running our restaurant. She and my brother were the main cooks, and so she would work many hours a day, and then if she got to leave early, she would come home and work in her massive vegetable gardens for hours and hours. And then, you know, she would, like I said, she would get up at 4 o'clock, and my dad in the evening would say to her, he'd say, "Now, can you, those dishes you need and those pans that you need at 4 in the morning, can you go ahead and put them on the bottom right now?" So she would make a lot of noise. But I think of her actually a lot, and maybe you think of your mom a lot too. But when I look at my hands are exactly like my mom's, the same shape and size. And as we have been washing our hands more in the last few months, it's hard to believe that March is not over, right? It's still March. But my mom, she washed her hands probably 40 or 50 times a day. And she passed that little trait on to me. So this is my world. If you're washing your hands more, welcome to my world. And she did not like shaking hands. And even though she grew up in Appalachia in the Depression, she had 7 kids. She wouldn't eat after anyone, including her kids. And so she passed on these wonderful little rituals. And she was funny. It was very funny. But one of the biggest memories that I have and the most frequent memories is the food that she made, right? And like I said, she had massive vegetable gardens. And it turns out, and I didn't know this at the time, but many of the dishes she made were traditional Appalachian dishes. I didn't know that. I thought it was normal, right? We all think what happens to us as children is normal. But she would make what my dad called bulldog gravy and cathead biscuits. So biscuits and gravy. And I remember my brother told me once, I was visiting after college or during college, and it was just my brother and me. She had made special, like in the afternoon, biscuits and gravy. And he looked at me and he said, "Isn't it amazing what she can do with flour and milk?" But it was really good. And she would make the sage sausage, but she would grow in the vegetable garden just for her, just for me, the little, really hot little peppers, and she would make a separate batch of really hot sausage just for her and me. And she would make summer squash where oil was part of the dish, and soup beans. And Mary and Therese, I'm sure you know what soup beans are. I thought everyone called them that. They don't. But make that with cornbread and relish. But probably her desserts were the favorite of our family. And she would make blackberry cobbler from wild blackberries. She would make banana pudding. And, you know, one of the favorite family stories is, you know, the older 5 kids had moved out of the house. And my sister and I were the only ones still at home. And before she went to work one day, she made a banana pudding. It was on a Friday, and we were going to take that to church the next day. Well, on the top of that banana pudding would be meringue, a layer of meringue. And she came home that night, and that meringue had sunk a lot because somebody had been digging under it. And so there are 3 people who I always got the blame for that: my sister, my dad, and me. And when I see my sister, we'll still say, "No, it was you that dug under the meringue." But I tell you, probably her most popular desserts, one was a fried apple pie. Now, and again, maybe you've had fried apple pies. One of my best friends came to Kentucky when Sarah and I were getting married, and he had grown up in actually around the world. And he came, and he went on and on. He said, "I've never had anything like that in my life. What else do you have that's that good?" I loved fried apple pies. But one of her, and probably her Most popular dessert was something called an apple stack cake. Again, I thought this was normal. It's not. If you Google Appalachian desserts, that will probably be the first thing that comes up. And an apple stack cake, now if you look online, you'll see the really fancy versions. I've never seen a fancy version of an apple stack cake. It wasn't my favorite thing, but people loved it. And so it would be thin layers of cake with probably five or six layers, and in the middle and on the top and around the side would be mainly some mixture of dried apples with sorghum or whatever. And the cake was sweet, but that was called an apple stack cake. And so apples, I think about apples, and you know, apples are pretty popular. Have you ever thought of that? In fact, apples might be the most popular food in this country. You think, well, what about potatoes? Well, potatoes could give it a run for its money, but you know, in the end, potatoes are potatoes, right? Mashed potatoes, baked, but they're good. Corn might give it a run. But you think about apples, they're based on a, you know, if you think of all the apple or all the desserts that are based with apples, just think about it for just a minute. And I bet if just by yourself, without talking to anyone else, within a minute, you could come up with at least 5 to 10, 15 different items that were made with apples. Apples are popular. Do you like apples? A lot of people do. Now, if two or three of us sat down together, within a minute or two, we could come up with 50. And you think I'm exaggerating, but no, apples are good. Now, a friend of mine, Mr. Tony Cardell, we've actually had this game that we played for a number of years. And it's like, you know, I like apples. And then we'd name several different things made with apples. Think about it, though. You know, America loves apples. What does this have to do with a message on the Sabbath? America loves apples. In fact, finish this phrase in your mind. It's American as apple pie. It used to say baseball, but baseball's not as popular as it was, but it's American as apple pie. You can have apple butter, apple chips, apple cider cookie, an apple cobbler, an apple crisp, cinnamon apple muffins, apple butter bundt cake, apple fritters. I love apple fritters. And I can't start on an apple fritter. And there was a donut shop in California. Oh, Winchell's. Don't ever go to Winchell's in California and try an apple fritter, because you might have to have two or three, and you don't want that. You do, but you don't. Apple Jack, apple juice, apple pie, apple sauce, apple sauce cake, apple spice cake, or apple stack cake. Similar but different. Apple soda, apple strudel, apple turnover, a baked apple, a brown Betty, a candy apple, a caramel apple, an apple-flavored hard candy, like a Jolly Rancher, hard cider, a Jewish apple cake, who knew, a fried apple pie, apple cinnamon tea. Don't even get me started on cinnamon apple things, right? All kinds of cinnamon apple, apples with cheese, salted apples, apple pie moonshine. They call that apple pie as well. Apple liqueur and just plain raw apples. And that's just the start. Now, one of the most well-known stories in American history centers on a man named John Chapman. And some might even believe that the story to be just that, a story, but it's actually true. Now, John Chapman, you may know him as Johnny Appleseed. He was a real person. He was a real person. He has a story that's pretty well known throughout American history. He was an eccentric frontier nurseryman who established orchards throughout the American Midwest, is what it was called at the time. He became the basis of the folk hero Johnny Appleseed, who has been the subject of countless stories, movies, and works of art. He was better. John Chapman was born in Leominster, Massachusetts, and I was going to try to say that correctly because I'm sure Mr. Railston will have to correct me on that. Leominster. And he was born on September 26, 1774. And his father fought as a Minuteman at the Battle of Concord and later served in the Continental Army under George General George Washington. In July 1776, while her husband was at war, Elizabeth Chapman, his mother, died in childbirth. And when Nathaniel returned home and remarried shortly thereafter, he and his new wife, Lucy Cooley, had a total of 10 children together, a lot of children. Now, a limited amount is known about Chapman's early life. He may have traveled west to Ohio, it's pretty likely that he did, with his brother, his younger brother, and meeting up with the rest of the family many years later in the early 1800s. It's likely that his father encouraged his son to become an orchardist, setting him up with an apprenticeship in the area. And by 1812, he was working independently as an orchardist and nurseryman. And he traveled widely, and he would plant orchards, put fences around them, and then he would go. And it was a way of actually becoming a landed person. You could grow the trees and sell them, but you could also lay claim to land. So he went throughout Pennsylvania and Ohio and parts of West Virginia and probably other areas since he was born in the Northeast. But he did that, and he created, from doing all of that, he became a legend that we know about today. Now, we'll come back to the subject of apples a little bit later. So if you had a computer, you can just circle that and we'll drag it over. We'll come back to the story about apples. But where did they come from? Where did apples come from? Of course, they were created by our Creator God, and He is a creator. He's the creator, and it's been said that creation is His occupation. Let's go to Colossians 1:15. We know this. We know Him, and even in our prayers, we talk about the great Creator God. Colossians 1, verse 15, we read that this is about the preeminence of Jesus Christ. It says in Colossians 1, verse 15, He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by Him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through Him and for Him, and He is before all things, and in Him all things consist. Now we won't turn there, but John 1, verses 1 to 3, talks about in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And verse 3, all things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. We know that, right? The apples come from the Creator God, along with all the other things we see. Now, there are several other references to God as a creator. In Job, there's some beautiful phrases and passages in Job and Psalms and many other places throughout the Bible. But let's look at a little bit more about God the Father and Jesus Christ in another book that speaks of their greatness, Isaiah 57. Let's go to Isaiah 57 and verse 15. We know He's the great creator God. We say that almost in passing. But if we look about and we can see even ourselves, and, you know, when I look at my hands, I think of my mom, but that's passed on. And actually, one of my nephews, he has a young daughter now. She's about 14 months old, and she has what I call the thumb that is that hallmark of my mom's hand, right? But it's creation, and we can see examples of creation in everything around us, including ourselves. But what else about God? Isaiah 57, verse 15. For thus says the High and Lofty One who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with Him who has a contrite and humble spirit to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. It's hard to grasp eternity. That's where God and Jesus Christ lived. And they've lived there forever. And I've said it a few times, we can almost grasp what eternity is going forward, but we can't quite get our minds around what it's like that they've always existed. They've always existed. Now, why would this great being who inhabits eternity, who created everything, why would He create us? Why would He create mankind? Why? Now, you'd think that there would be many, many verses that would answer that question very directly. Why did He create man? You would think that, I'm just going to open the Bible and that question will be posed 500 times and it'll be answered 2,000 times. Just open the Bible. that we just flip it open. And that's not necessarily the case, but there are some which answer the question directly. Let's stay in Isaiah and go back a few chapters to Isaiah 43. Why did God create man? We know we can see the creation all around us. Why did he create man? Isaiah, pardon me, 43. Isaiah 43, verses 6 to 7. Isaiah 43, verses 6 to 7. And the first part of that chapter, if you want to read that later, is beautiful too. It talks about God as a creator. But we'll jump in here in verse 6. This is God talking as in the heading of this section in my Bible is called the Redeemer of Israel. Verse 6, I say to the north, give them up, and to the south, do not keep them back. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth. Everyone who is called by my name, whom I have created, why? For my glory. I have formed him, yes, I have made him. Now we have the answer, but what does that mean? He created man for his glory? Notice the family language, though. There's family language here. Sons and daughters. And those are big hints about why God created us and what it means that he created us for his glory. But what does glory mean? What does it mean? Have you ever tried to define what it means without using the word itself? Now, I use it sometimes to describe Minnesota summers. Because Sarah has used the words, because, oh, Minnesota summers are glorious. How can you describe glory? And how often do you use that word? Probably not very often. Let's go to John 15 and get a little bit more of what that means. John 15, when it talks about, you know, how do we answer what that means, that God created man for his glory? Why? What does that mean? How does it come to life for us? I'll start in verse 5, a familiar section of scripture, I'm sure. John 15, verse 5, it says, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch and is withered, and they gather them and throw them into the fire and they are burned. Verse 7, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples. So he created us for his glory, and that is accomplished through fruit. Oh, well, here. Now, we're going to come back to the story about apples. Not yet. We'll get back to apples, but not yet. Oh, well, maybe it's about watermelon. I've sold a lot of watermelon when I was a teenager. I'll tell you some stories about that in a few minutes. Maybe it's honeydew melon. No, that's not the kind of fruit it's talking about. We know that. What kind of fruit is it talking about here? It's spiritual fruit. And we're like, oh, I know what this is. I know what this is. But it's fruit glorifies God. Have we thought of it that way before? The fruit that he will give us will give him glory. But what is glory? We'll come to that. Let's go to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verse 8. Ephesians 5, verse 8. Talking about fruit, but not grapes, not tomatoes. Tomatoes are fruit. A lot of you grow these things. I know you know that. Ephesians 5, verse 8, for you were once darkness. Now notice it doesn't say that you're in darkness. It says you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord, not from what we do. And it's not that we were in darkness or we are in light. It's that we were darkness. We were unknowing of God's way and of his spirit and of his plan. Now it says, walk as children of light, for the fruit of the spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. Now who does that sound like? goodness and righteousness and truth. That sounds like God and His Spirit. We want it to be like us, but He's glorified by that fruit. And we'll come to see what a little bit more about what the word glorified can mean. Tomatoes? No. Kumquat? Has anyone ever had a kumquat? When I was in school in California, they had kumquat trees between some of the dorms. And, you know, they look like very small oranges, but they're almost more oval in shape. And you could just eat the whole, you know, we occasionally grab a kumquat, and you just eat the whole thing, though. Because you can't peel it because there's not much there, but it's an interesting piece of fruit, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about spiritual fruit that glorifies God, and that's the reason He created us. But we're not in darkness now, but we were darkness, but we are now. We were darkness, but now we're light through Him. And here we go again talking about spiritual fruit. Real spiritual fruit comes from God, and we will see a little bit more about an aspect of that later, and maybe it will come to life just a little bit more. This is a spiritual process made possible and generated by God's Spirit. His plan for us individually and as all mankind. He's glorified by the fruit that we bear. Let's go to a scripture. If I talk about the fruits of the Spirit, you could even write it down before I give it to you. Galatians chapter 5. Let's go to Galatians 5. And we think about this. And this, the whole book of Galatians is really written to the Gentiles who were in that church. This is after, this is most likely, very likely, after the council in Jerusalem that's described in Acts 15, when the whole topic of circumcision was essentially settled, right? But people from members of the church from Jerusalem, it looks like, came into Galatia and were telling the Gentile brethren there, it's like, no, what Paul is telling you is not right. You do actually need to be circumcised. That you didn't understand. He's not telling you the entire story. Now, were they coming in the guise of coming, being sent there? Maybe. But that's the whole point. But as we lead up to this and you think of what Paul is telling them, he's telling them about the fruit that comes from the Spirit, that it doesn't come, it's not a physical thing. It's not about physical fruit. It's spiritual fruit that comes from God, that He grants us. And we think about it, that glorifies Him. So when we read Galatians 5:22 now, and it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is what? It's about God. It's God's character. It's love and joy and peace and long-suffering, kindness and goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. Because that was what they were telling the brethren there. They were getting they were saying that you don't have to keep the Ten Commandments. And Paul was saying that you do, but the fruit of God's Spirit is from God. And that glorifies God. He's glorified by the abundance of all these fruits in His people. And it's made possible by His Spirit. But what does glory or glorified actually mean? Could you still give me a definition? What does it mean? Let's go back to Isaiah 43, and let's read verse 7 again. And I'll tell you, one of the ways that the word glorified can be translated, it might help us as we think about fruit. Isaiah 43, verse 7, it says, bring my sons from afar, we read this earlier, and my daughters from the ends of the earth, my family. Bring my family from around the ends of the earth. Everyone who is called by my name, and if we are called by God's name, we have to be like Him. We have to be like He behaves, have His character. It says, everyone who is called by my name, whom I've created for my glory, I have formed him, yes, I have made him. A meaning of the word used here for glory is abundance or riches. Abundance or riches. And if we think of it that way, does that make sense? Now we've talked about fruit, and He's a creator, but it's glorified in abundance, an increase. So we think about that. It's for God's, he's created it for his abundance, his gain, his increase. The increase of God's holy, righteous character is a way he's glorified. He's glorified by the increase of his character. We'll come a little bit more, maybe this will help a little bit. So we start to see that God is a God of increase. And once you start thinking of the Bible with that, that God is a God of increase, things will start, you'll start seeing lots of examples of that. What does this have to do with apples? Now, if we think of the principle of increase, we start to see it throughout all of God's word and all of his creation. Let's go to Philippians 1. Philippians 1, we'll start in verse 8. And just think about God as a God of increase, and that increase is how he's glorified. He's glorified through more and more of his character. And it starts to describe an aspect of who he is, of who God is. Philippians 1 verse 8, for God is my witness how greatly I long for you all with the affection of Jesus Christ. And this I pray that your love, what? May abound still more and more. That your love, the fruit of God's Spirit may grow. It continues to grow and increase. And it will abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Not something we can work up on our own, but these are gifts that are given to us, his character, and that we exhibit those. Those are his increase, and he's glorified by that. The increase of the fruits of his righteousness provide glory to him. And we'll start seeing that theme throughout his word. Let's go to Romans 8. We'll see this theme again. Romans 8, 29. This is just one verse past that verse that we probably all know that says that all things work to good for those who love him. This is one verse below that. Romans 8, verse 29. For whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. This is not new. But if we think about it in the theme that God is a God of increase, and that is glorifying to him, we start seeing this everywhere. Many brethren, sons and daughters, that show the increase of God's character and that can exist in eternity with him. He's always existed. He's inviting us into that eternity. It was the plan all along for God to recreate after his kind. And we see that. Let's go to Genesis 1. We see all the examples of everything that was created, right? And then everything it says was, you know, after its kind, and these were created after its kind. And then we come to verse 26 of Genesis 1. We've read this many times, but he says in verse 26 of Genesis 1, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. In other words, according to our kind. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Right. That's right. We know that. We've read that. But what does this have to do with apples? Doesn't everything have to do with apples? Not yet. A watermelon? Have you ever had a watermelon, a seedless watermelon? They're not quite as good. I have to tell you one. I'll tell you more stories about watermelon. But we used to sell watermelon in the summer. I've told you about the big blue truck that my dad had. We had restaurants, and he had a furniture store. But he would also, he had this big blue truck. And in the summer, he would go to Georgia and get watermelon and cantaloupe and honeydew. And one summer, my first summer out of, I was just, had 1 year of college, and we had been selling watermelon for a long time, and I hated seeing that blue truck come up the driveway. And so I did, I strained my back, but I can self-adjust it in one spot there from watermelon. But when you get a really ripe watermelon, and we would always get sometimes you get the round ones, but often those oblong ones, I don't see them as much anymore. They're easier to stack, I'll tell you. But they get really warm, and really ripe. If you get a really good ripe watermelon, and it has to be ripe. I've only seen this a couple of times, and if you drop it just a little bit, and it will break open if it's really ripe in the heart of a watermelon. Have you ever had the heart of a watermelon? A really ripe one that's grown and not picked too early? There's no seeds in it, but it's the reddest, the sweetest thing you've ever had. It's a beautiful piece of fruit, but we're not talking about that just yet. But what does all this creation have to do with fruit? Let's go to Romans 1, verse 18. Maybe you knew I was going here. Romans 1, verse 18. Romans 1, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them. For God has shown it to them. Verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, God's invisible attributes, are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, like apples. We can see that our God is the God of increase in nature and what he's created. This is one of the most striking things about God's nature. He is the God of increase. So an apple has how many seeds? Most apples, if you cut an apple open, they have usually five. The apples are slightly, I had an interesting apple this week I've never had before. And I'll tell you about that in a second. But if you cut open a typical, let's say a Red Delicious apple, most of them will have five carpels, like little pockets, and there'll be a couple of seeds. So an apple, on average, has about 10 seeds. You can grow a tree from a seed. Now, it's not always easy, and you have to know how to do it, but you can grow apple trees. Obviously, they come from seeds. One apple, 10 seeds. One apple is 10 seeds. And you can grow them from that, but it takes 7 to 10 years, and then, you know, another few. But what's 7 to 10 years to God? And then another few years to actually get fruit. So a lot of people buy the little trees, like, you know, that Johnny Appleseed would perhaps planted. I'm not sure what kind he planted, but you can buy like a small apple tree. Anybody ever bought one and planted it? And how long does it take for it to bear fruit? But it bears fruit. That initially came from a seed. An apple has 10 seeds. Fruit and vegetable seeds are a great example of exponentialism. Now, we hear this word all the time. We go, we had exponential amount more rain. We throw that word around, but probably not correctly. Now, exponentialize is relating to an exponent, right? And you, maybe you've heard this during this COVID period. They'll go, well, as it comes about, you know, the first day you may have 100 cases, and it will double the next day, and it will keep doubling. Exponentialism, and that's just doubling. What if something multiplies by 10 each time? Exponentialism, that's what it is. Here's a really interesting story. It's from a site called Dr. Mike's Math Games for Kids, but this is an old story that's in many places, and I'll read it to you briefly here. So there's a famous legend about the origin of chess, the game of chess, that goes like this. When the inventor of the game showed it to the Emperor of India, the Emperor was so impressed by the new game that he said to the man, "Name your reward." The man responded, "O emperor, my wishes are simple. I only wish for this. Give me one grain of rice for the first square of the chessboard, two grains for the next square, four for the next, eight for the next, and so on for all 64 squares, with each square having doubled the number of the grains as the square before." The emperor agreed, amazed that the man had asked for such a small reward, or so he thought. After a week, his treasurer came back and informed him that the reward would add up to an astronomical sum far greater than all the rice that could conceivably be produced in many, many centuries. Exponential. One apple, 10 seeds. You can grow trees from one apple. He goes on to say here, a particular lake has water lilies growing on it. On the first day, there is one water lily. Each day, the number of water lilies doubles. After 30 days, the water lilies cover half the lake. How long before they cover the other half of the lake, or so the whole lake is full? The answer is both obvious and very surprising. The lilies that took 30 days to cover half the lake only take one more day to cover the other half. They fill the lake on day 31. An average apple has 10 seeds. Each seed has the potential of a tree. 10 trees equals thousands of potential apples. And those apples leading to other trees. God is a God of increase. And we see that through the Bible. It's an attribute of God. Why did he create man? For his glory. And his glory, he's glorified through the fruits. And those fruits have to continue to grow. Now, this past week, one of my sisters forwarded an old photograph to me. Now, I've told you I'm the youngest of several. And my father's father died before I was born. But I hear stories about him. And she sent a picture of him in front of what my dad called the old home place. Now, I remember going to that old home place. This picture was from 1933, 1943, so nearly 90 years ago. And my father, there's a camera called the Brownie Box camera. If you've ever heard of the Brownie Box, right? It was a little inexpensive camera. And I always wondered who took those pictures that I see of my family from the 30s and 40s and earlier. But somebody had taken a Brownie Box camera and taken a picture of my granddad with two mules. But in the back, you can see in the distance, kind of blurry, my dad to the right, and I know it was him. You could tell by even the way he was standing, he was 9, 10 years old. And then to the other side were two of his brothers, one half brother and his full brother. I'm sure that's who they were. But behind them was the old home place, which still stands. It's still in our family. And my dad grew up in that house. And I don't know if this is true, but where his other brothers were standing, it looks like there were apple trees. And I don't know if that's the case. But they were playing in some things that were clearly trees. Now, behind the old home place, and my brother told me later that this old home place, I said, you know, what happened is my grandparents sold that to their oldest son, who was my dad's oldest half-brother. So he was quite old. And it's still in his family. And they own, it's in the Daniel Boone National Forest, but they were there before the forest was designated. And it's on something we always called Estrie Tower Ridge, right? And it's a ridge in the middle of the woods, but there are still houses there. And my cousin lives in a house nearby, and between those, the old home place and where he lives, he's created an orchard. Now, he created that orchard, and what I remember about that old home place is behind that, and this was 40 years ago, there were 2 to 4 really mature apple trees. And they had been there a long time. And so I assume they'd been there even when my dad was probably in that picture. But my cousin now, who lives there, he's older, right? He's nearly 30 years older than I am. But he's built an orchard that he grafted from those old apple trees in the back. Now, those old apple trees, when I was a teenager, when I first would go and see them there, just bushels and bushels of really good apples. And now, I was talking to my cousin's daughter, who is my age. I was emailing with her. We're still in contact. And I said, do you remember those apple trees? She goes, yeah. She goes, Mamaw, she goes, I don't know why she would always use the apples that had fallen to the ground when there were really ones that weren't blemished on the tree. Well, they were probably softer and easier, maybe easier to cook, I'm not sure. But dozens of bushels for how many years? And now those trees are another orchard. Every apple has 10 seeds. God is a God of increase. That's just apples. That's just apples. Now, we would sell apples. I know we in the fall, that blue truck would go to North Carolina, up in the mountains of northwestern North Carolina, and get apples. And I sold apples as well. We'd sell them to farm stores. We would sell them in front of our restaurants, put them out there. And we'd have Jonathan apples. Jonathan apples were cooking apples, Red Delicious, all kinds of different apples. But an apple I had this week, I cut it open to see the seeds. It was a nice apple. I'd never had this apple before. But it had the seeds, but they were tiny and clear. And there seemed to be more than 10. When I was growing up in 6th, 7th grade, they would have competitions in our middle school to do, you could sell things. You could sell seeds and magazines. And I didn't, all I wanted was the prize. I have no idea what the money was for, but I loved it. We would sell seeds. And just think of, you can still buy them at Target, little packs of annual flower seeds, right? You can still do that. We have some daisies that are perennials in the front of our house. And we thought that the winter before last had killed them because they weren't there last year. They have come back with a vengeance. And what do? They take over everything else. They multiply. Because what? That's the nature. They multiply. God is a God of increase. Hostas. Hostas get so big, you have to split them so you can plant them somewhere else. Do we get the picture? We can know God from his creation. That's an attribute. His invisible attributes are not invisible. We see it all around us. Our God is the God of increase. What about corn? Now, I could go on all day, and I won't. I've been asked to keep it short. What about corn? So, when we were first moved up here, probably in two or three years after we moved up here, so 2007, 2008, I was driving down to the church in Austin to speak, and we'd driven down to Rochester, too, different roads. And I think it must have been the road to Rochester once to visit someone down there. I was surprised at just the miles and miles and miles and miles of corn for all you could see. Now, the walkers could tell us if that's still the case. But as far as you could see to the west and as far as you could see to the east, corn. You can grow a stalk of corn. You plant it from seed. I was talking to Mr. Lang. He says that he can see sweet corn will usually get one ear, sometimes two, maybe three. The most, occasionally you can see one that gets four. But that corn stalk comes from a seed. And each typical corn cob will have, it says here, can vary from 500 to 1,000 kernels. One seed, one plant, 1,200 seeds, 2,400 seeds. That's a multiply. That's God is glorified through the creation of his spiritual character in us. Now, whether you're raising, it says field corn, popcorn, sweet corn, they all grow basically the same way. Once the seed or kernel is planted in an inch or two of soil, it germinates in 5 to 12 days, depending on the variety and the soil temperature. Corn won't germinate if the soil temperature is below 55 degrees. It germinates fastest in soil that is 68 to 86 degrees Fahrenheit. What about citrus? I won't go on. I've told you about kumquats. What about the seeds and lemons? Have you counted the seeds in a lemon? And again, we could go on. What about animals? Now, Robins are beautiful birds. I don't like when they dive bomb if you get near their nest. And I don't like that they fly into your window. So a fake owl works, by the way. But a typical robin, sometimes they live 5 to 6 years, a female robin. Sometimes they don't make it out of the first year. Most live 2 to 3 years. An average robin will have anywhere from 20 to 60 chicks. It's in the animal world as well. God's invisible attributes are visible in nature. Lots of robins, rabbits, mice, you name it. Rabbits are probably infamous. They say, oh, yeah. Is our God a God of increase? Now, we know the story of Joseph. What does Joseph's name mean? Have you heard that lately? It means, ready for this? Increase, or I will add. Of course it does. Joseph is derived from the Latin form of Greek, Yosef, from the Hebrew name meaning he will add. So what? So I was talking to a friend of mine. He says, what are you going to speak about? So I don't usually tell people what I'm going to speak about, but I told him. And he asked me to occasionally evaluate his messages before he gives them. And I always ask him the question at every, I said, well, that's a really good message, but where's the so what? Where's the so what? God is a God of it. So what? That's good to know. Let's go to Hebrews 2. Hebrews 2. What about this? So what? In some ways you think, look, we're talking about God's attributes, his character. That's enough. But there's more. There's more. There's a so what. Hebrews 2 verse 10. For it was fitting for him for whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory. He's created himself in our likeness. He will also increase us and his fruit. Some estimates put that 100 billion people have lived since creation. 100 billion. I'm not sure how many, but that sounds viable. It says, bringing many sons to glory to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings, for both he who sanctifies and those who are being sanctified are all of one, for which reason he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I will declare your name to my brethren in the midst of the assembly. I will sing praise to you. Let's go to Romans 1 and read one verse before where we read last time. Romans 1, verse 17. Bringing many sons to glory. That's the so what. Romans 1, verse 17. Romans 1, verse 17. Now, we started in verse 18 before. We'll start one verse earlier. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. Again, remember I said, once we start looking for this, we'll see it everywhere. What does faith to faith mean? Now, it could mean different things, right? But what does it say here? For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. Could that mean we grow in faith that he gives us? I think that's very likely. And maybe faith in different things. Maybe it's faith that I will find a mate, right? That's one kind of faith. God will take care of us in that way. Maybe it's something else with our health. God will give us faith to that. Maybe faith is brick by brick. But the indication here is that you grow in faith, but it's not something that we engender. It's a gift from God. When it's called the faith of Jesus Christ, he gives that. And it's faith to faith. That's the so what. Now, the fall holy days begin next month. I can say that because today's August 1st. They begin in the fall holy days. And what are they about? They're about the harvest. And it's that we've already went through Passover. We've gone through that, which is the smaller harvest. It talks about people who know God's way before the full plan has come to fruit, as it were. But the fall holy day represents much more, when all of mankind will be revealed and have the opportunity to be the sons and daughters of Jesus Christ and God the Father, the family of God. They begin next month, focusing on what? On his increase and his glory. What did he create us? created us for his glory. He is a God of increase. Isaiah 9, you've had to think I would turn here. Isaiah 9, verse 6 to 7. We'll hear this many times in the fall holy days. I also wanted to be the first one to speak about the fall holy days, so I put my marker down here, right? In a golf tournament, you can put the marker says longest drive, but the first message for the, I'm just kidding. Isaiah 9, verse 6 to 7. For unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. What does it say in verse 7? Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Every apple has 10 seeds. That doesn't sound like a lot until you realize the rule of being an exponential growth. How many apple trees and how many other apples could come from that one apple? Mankind was created for God's glory, for his increase, and we are to bear fruit, real fruit that comes from him. We're to always be becoming more and more like him. So the next time you have a dish made with apples, think about what it means. How many seeds were in those apples? Think about the God of increase. During the fall holy days, have an apple. Have a couple. Maybe you don't like apples, but I bet you like something that they're made from. Or pay attention to the fruit that you eat and notice the seeds. And remember that God is a God of increase. Have an apple, cut it open, count the seeds, and remember our God. And as we come into these holy days that start in a few weeks, remember that God is a God of increase.